The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bowman. And unfortunately, Nathan Gladwell and Greg Oldenburg could not make it to today's show, so it is just me. We're going to start off with some NBA and then go into some college football discussion. So starting off with the NBA here, the first story we have is the Cleveland Cavaliers fired head coach J.B. Bickerstaff after five seasons at the helm. Bickerstaff had just led the Cleveland Cavaliers to their first series, playoff series win since LeBron had been there back in, I believe, 2018 was the last time they had a playoff win, series win. And that's just unfortunate for J.B. Bickerstaff as he had appeared to start getting his feet under him in Cleveland. They just brought in Donovan Mitchell a couple seasons ago. Darius Garland had been an all-star, I believe, one or two seasons ago. Evan Mobley, like, he was blossoming into the star that they'd hoped he would be when they drafted him third overall, I believe, back in 2020. Just unfortunately, Bickerstaff ended up getting the boot. There are some rumors that Donovan Mitchell and him did not get along very well. The locker room was really against him, didn't like his coaching style, similar to what it appeared to happen with the Lakers and Darvin Ham. So Bickerstaff does get the boot here. Some names that have been rumored to go out or be for the Cleveland Cavaliers opening now are Golden State assistant Kenny Atkinson, who was the head coach for the Brooklyn Nets a few years ago. You had New Orleans assistant James Borrego, who was the Charlotte Hornets head coach right before Steve Clifford was, about, I believe, 3 or 4 years ago. And then Frank Vogel, who was just fired by the Phoenix Suns. Not sure if any of those guys are an instant upgrade over J.B. Bickerstaff, but if any of them were, I think Kenny Atkinson would be that guy. He has the experience working with a younger core of players. If they were to keep Darius Garland and Evan Mobley, who are on the younger side, it looks like it'll be Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland. Those will be the guys who one will be traded, one will be kept in Cleveland. I would assume the Cavaliers would prioritize Donovan Mitchell considering his playoff performances these past playoffs, and looking at Darius Garland's playoff performances alongside Donovan Mitchell, and even when Mitchell was out those last few games of the Boston Celtics series, it's clear that Donovan Mitchell was that guy for Cleveland, and when they could get anything going, it was Mitchell to do the majority of the scoring, similar to what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander did for the Oklahoma City Thunder. When the team was not doing well, he picked up the slack and did everything he could to will them to a win, and Donovan Mitchell did end up getting them a win in that Celtics series. And then you look at Jared Allen. He's been rumored to be on the way out as well, especially with the new head coach coming in. I do not see in the modern NBA the ability to run Mobley and Allen next to each other. Neither of those guys are prolific three-point shooters, more rim protector type guys. I know Evan Mobley has a better shooting stroke than Jared Allen. Jared Allen is just, you're not going to get a mid-range or three-point shot at him. But this current day of NBA, you're probably going to get 1 7-footer in there, then a bunch of smaller guys. The outlier here is the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have started Cat and Rudy Gobert. As we're seeing currently in the conference finals in the West with Rudy Gobert and Cat, it's not really working out for them. Rudy Gobert is seemingly ineffective offensively, and he has his moments defensively. We saw with the Luka shot. And Cat is, I believe, 4 for 32 at this point from the three-point line, so he's not doing well either. So I think going forward, you probably will see Jared Allen out the door, considering there has been some animosity between some players and some coaches in the front office when Jared Allen did not play through that rib injury. Kobe Altman, the GM, said there was really no way Allen could, but you had teammates like Marcus Morris come out and say that he could have played through it. So we don't know what's true or not. But unfortunately, it will look like this Cavaliers team is going to be a whole lot different, a new head coach. Probably a new roster, whether that be built around Darius Garland and Evan Mobley, Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley, or if somehow they manage to keep all four of those guys, which I do not see being very likely. I would assume at least one of Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, and Jared Allen are gone going into next season, if not two. So I'm looking forward to see what this Cavaliers team looks like going forward and how they manage Donovan Mitchell, because of all those four players I mentioned, Donovan Mitchell is the least expendable. If you rated Donovan Mitchell, I don't think this team's going to be contending in the Eastern Conference for a little bit. They're probably going to have to go into another mini rebuild or go out and try to get another star player, whether that be trying to get Atlanta's DeJounte Murray or something like that, or maybe New Orleans's Brandon Ingram. I'm not sure what that looks like, but they have to prioritize keeping Donovan Mitchell, making him happy, because it was proven in this playoffs. He's the engine that makes them go, and going forward, he has to be the face of that franchise. Moving on, starting in the 2024-2025 season, the NBA is on the verge of finalizing a new media rights deal with ESPN slash Disney, NBC, and Amazon, which will leave TNT without NBA games for the first time in more than 20 years. And this would also mean that the beloved Inside the NBA show would be no longer. TNT's parent company, Warner Bros. Discovery, does have the right to match their offer, but it does seem likely at this time. However, last Thursday, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver said that the negotiations with TNT are still ongoing, and there's not to worry about losing Inside the NBA just yet. Looking at it right now, it doesn't look likely that we're going to have Inside the NBA after next season. This time next year, we'll probably be talking about what it looks like going forward when it comes to pregame and postgame show NBA shows. I think it's a huge loss for the NBA if they were to get rid of this crew. I mean, Ernie Johnson, it's Chuck went on a show and said it's unlikely that Ernie Johnson does leave Turner. He's been really loyal to them. If he might retire, he might transition to baseball, which is what I believe his dad was known for. He might go to hockey. He might maybe even do the college football playoff games, which I'm about to go over here in a second. But it's unlikely Ernie Johnson leaves, which would be a huge blow to the Inside the NBA show because he is the heart of that, the heartbeat of it. He keeps all those guys in check, which is a very hard thing to do, especially with Charles Barkley and some of the things he says, as well as Shaquille O'Neal. To keep those guys in check and to make sure everything works, I think Ernie Johnson has done a great job at that. I think he's the best host of any show, sports show on the planet. It'd be a huge loss for them and the NBA to not have Ernie Johnson hosting a show for them. Charles Barkley has mentioned that he's going to try to, if they lose Inside the NBA on TNT and all that, he's going to try to get his production company to get the rights to it and sub-license it out, whether that be to an ESPN or an NBC or Amazon. And I don't believe NBC or Amazon does have a ingrained NBA post-game, pre-game show. So maybe that's where they land. It's just going to be, how do you replace Ernie Johnson? And I'm not sure right away there's going to be a guy you identify immediately, whether it be at NBC or Amazon, and go, yeah, that'll be the replacement for Ernie Johnson. And it's going to go just as well as it has been for the past, I want to say, 15 plus years. I don't know an NBA without the Inside the NBA crew. So that would be a huge loss for fans, the NBA. I mean, I don't know how the NBA, I know it's money driven, but how the NBA looks at this and goes, yeah, we're okay with losing Inside the NBA, but it's just the way business goes. Got to have the money. And it looks like that Warner Bros. Is not willing to pony up the $2.6 billion $2.3 billion for the rights and instead spend it on college football games, which can't blame them because college football is a big money maker, big draw to television. And, you know, it's what they want. The one thing I did have complaints about with TNT is it's very hard to get access to them. You have to go buy a YouTube TV or Sling or have cable or something like that, or have some sort of plan to watch them. That's the biggest downfall to TNT. But I mean, when it's as good as it is, you just pony up the money because it's, you get to watch that crew and you get to listen to Kevin Harlan call a game. And that's going to be another thing is Kevin Harlan will not be calling NBA games anymore. And I think he's one of the better commentators in the game, whether that be calling NFL, NBA, college basketball. I think he's a classic. Him and Ian Eagle are some of my favorites alongside Mike Breen. So to lose one of those big three that I like, it's going to be hard to get my head around it. So it's unfortunate that we're probably going to end up losing TNT, the NBA on TNT, and especially Inside the NBA crew. All the memories those guys have made and the fun times I had watching them and watching the funny moments on replay. You can go check TikTok, I'm sure, YouTube Shorts. There's just countless funny moments you can see with Charles Barkley, Shaq, Kenny running to the monitor, falling, Chuck getting ping pong balls dropped on his head, Shaq and Chuck bantering back and forth. I believe just last night after the Minnesota Mavericks, Timberwolves and Dallas Mavericks game, Shaq started talking about how he lost in the playoffs and then Chuck roasted him for it. And then Shaq brought up he had his rings and Chuck didn't. So there's always that funny banter and it's going to be really missed if they cannot get a deal going forward. Talking about keeping on the track of TNT, ESPN reached an agreement to sublicense select college football games to TNT. The TNT will air the two first-round games in 2024 and 2025, and then from 2026 to 2028, in addition to those two first-round games they'll get to air, they'll get an additional two quarterfinal games. So it does look like that the Warner Bros. Discovery and TNT prioritized getting college football over the NBA, which, like I mentioned earlier, the college football playoff will definitely drive people to it and get them to watch TNT much more than I think the NBA would. And I'm assuming it would bring more money in for them, but I can't say that the inside the NBA doesn't, because it's Emmy award winning show. I believe they just won an Emmy for being one of the best sports show on television. So losing that is definitely a huge blow to them. I'm not sure what their plan is for them, but to get the college football playoff games as a somewhat replacement for the inside the NBA and NBA games on TNT, I guess, is okay going forward. I don't agree with losing that crew and what you've built with the NBA to go for college football, who's already going to be mainly on ESPN. You're going to have to compete with ESPN to get viewers. Whereas when you're with TNT, and right now when the playoff games are on, there's no competition. There's no ESPN's not streaming the conference finals. It's TNT. I believe it's split up. I think ABC might have it, and then TNT has one conference finals. ABC has the other. But you have no competition. So to go in and try to compete with ESPN, I don't think it's a workout for them. I'd much prefer them keep the inside the NBA and the NBA on TNT, because they've established such great things and such an historical run they've been on. Just sad that they decided to prioritize college football. But who wouldn't nowadays with what they're bringing in money-wise and viewer-wise? Keeping on the track of college football here. Starting in the summer, fall of 2025, the NCAA and its Power Five conferences, or I guess Power Four now with Pac-12 no longer existing, have agreed to allow schools to directly pay players for the first time in the 100-plus-year history of college sports. The NCAA will also pay more than $2.7 billion in damages over 10 years to past and current athletes. The parties also agreed to a revenue-sharing plan, allowing each school to share up to roughly $20 million per year with its athletes. So, college football, NCAA sports are no longer, I don't think you can consider them amateur sports. To be fair, I don't think you could consider them amateur sports after the NIL stuff was introduced. But it's basically the NFL's D-League, whatever you want to call it now. Or it's basically just the NFL. Because if this is going to become free agency, schools are going to have about $20 million in cap space. That's what it's looking like when I went over. And they're going to have that money to go buy players. To go, whether it be in the transfer portal or high school, probably much more in the transfer portal, but they're going to be able to buy these athletes, and it's just going to become the wild, wild west. And every year, it'll probably be, unless these players are extra loyal to their coaches and the school they committed to, like for say, I'd be much more loyal to an Alabama, and I would probably wouldn't enter the transfer portal. Whereas somebody that commits to Alabama to go win a ring, and let's say they don't win the ring year one, and they see Texas win a ring, and then more likely to end at the end of the transfer portal and Texas comes out and offers them $5 million of the $20 million cap space, then I'm assuming they're probably going to go there than stay at Alabama if they're wanting to go chase that ring. So it's going to become the wild, wild west. Players are going to go where the money's at majority of the time. Hopefully it doesn't become that way, but in the NFL and the NBA, it definitely is that way. Players go where the money is, whether it's at a terrible franchise or if it's somewhere where they can win. They want the money, and I can't blame them. If I was able to make $5 million to play a sport I loved, I would go make it. So I can't blame them. I don't disagree with paying the players. I believe they deserve to get paid. They're putting their bodies on the line. We've seen players play college football, be really good, and then at the latter part of their career, tear their ACL, tear their Achilles, have some concussion problem, and not be able to go to the NFL and find success and lose out on all that money and not be able to make the money off their talent, which is very unfortunate. I just saw the other day on TikTok talking about the Stanford running back Bryce Love, who was in the Heisman race and then came back for another year, tore his ACL, I believe, and didn't play a snap in the NFL. So I think this is much deserving for these players to make money. I just hate the fact that as of right now, it really doesn't look like there's a lot of guardrails set up you can't do certain things to contact players, or you can only spend X amount of money on a certain position or anything like that. I think there needs to be more guidelines set up for this type of thing. And I believe they're working towards it. I believe in the post or the article by Ross Dellinger, he mentioned that the court and the lawyers and all that are hoping that the political system help comes in and helps out legislatively and sort of sets up these guardrails. But as we've seen, I don't want to get political here, but the political system is not, the legislative system is not really doing much when it comes to college football. They have a lot more better things to be worrying about as of right now. So I think this is going forward. More guardrails have to be set up for this, but I think much deserving, these players are going to get paid for putting their bodies on the line and playing the game they love. And the players before them over the past 10 years are going to get money from damages, and much deservedly. So you're going to get the player, hopefully the players that dealt with these career-ending injuries or injuries that harmed their NFL careers and didn't make the money they should, will get the money and will get a good portion so they can benefit off of, and they don't have to be living in lesser circumstances. I mean, going forward, they just have to, they have to set up guidelines, like I said. Looking at Title IX, there was no guidelines when this ruling was set, how the money is going to be distributed throughout the sports. If it's going to be, I'm assuming that when they ruled this, it was going to be like, okay, most of it's probably going to go to college football, but Title IX and the ruling has to be an equal share between men and women money. So I'll be interested to see what the guidelines are set up for that, how the schools manage that, because they're going to want to spend the more money on their big money makers like college football and college basketball, but they have to be willing to spend it on the men, women's college basketball, women's sports like softball, stuff like that. So there's going to have to be, like I said, once again, guardrails set up. And as of right now, sitting here talking about it, there's no guardrails realistically set up going forward for this ruling. And one more thing here, EA Sports will be paying each school included in its college football video game this season based on a tier system based on the final AP rankings from the past 10 years. And it looks like EA Sports spent out $1.2 million to get all 134 FBS schools into the game. So they were not messing around. They wanted to get this done. They wanted to get all the schools in their game, and they did it. It was a little bit costly, but ended up doing it. The tiers are as follows. Tier 1, which is 6 to 10 top 25 finishes, get about $100,000. Tier 2, which is 2 to 5 top 25 finishes, get about $60,000. Tier 3 is you have one top 25 finish, which was $40,000. And then tier 4, which you have zero top 25 finishes, gets $10,000. So even EA Sports here is paying based off success. Maybe that's a sort of tier system that the college football money makers and salary cap managers are going to have to do going forward with the athletes, so they're not paying absurd amounts of money to one athlete and screwing everybody else, which I probably think probably will still happen regardless. But you look at tier 1, it includes Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Georgia, LSU, Michigan, Oregon, Oklahoma State, Penn State, Utah, and Iowa. Kind of weird Iowa's up there considering the funny things following that program and the fact they don't do offense good. But they have been lucky enough to play in a weaker division in the Big Ten and benefit with their pretty weak schedule and getting wins because their defense is so good. So not surprising that I was on that tier, but I don't think anybody sitting here is surprised that the teams I just listed are sitting in tier 1 with all those top 25 finishes. And I'm not going to sit here and go through tier 2, tier 3, and tier 4, because we'd be sitting here for about 3 to 4 hours, me trying to read off all these teams. But you look at the Auburn Tigers, they are in tier 2, so they did not fall right farther behind from Alabama than needed. Tennessee's in tier 2 as well. Texas, Florida State, USC, Houston, Louisville, Baylor, Ole Miss, TCU. So there's some good teams in there. You look at tier 4, UConn, Duke, Maryland. I think it's weird that Duke didn't ever have a top 25 finish. I felt like they did at one point. Maybe there was one with Daniel Jones or something. I feel like there was one with Daniel Jones. Maybe I'm wrong. I guess I am wrong because it's not on there. Purdue, Texas Tech. It's just weird that none of those teams in the past 10 years have finished in the top 25, considering some of the NFL talent they had on them, especially Duke. They've had, outside of Daniel Jones, they still had some pretty good guys on those rosters. Just an interesting circumstance that's how EA Sports decided to pay out the schools, and that the schools were willing to agree to that. But I think it was the right way to do it. I don't think schools like Alabama should be getting paid the same as somebody like Vanderbilt, because Alabama is a much bigger brand and Vanderbilt, I mean, outside of really baseball and the pedigree of their academics, their football program is not as good as Alabama's, never has been. I don't think it ever will be. Maybe that'll come back to bite me, but I don't think it will. So, interesting way to pay the schools out. I think EA did the right thing here for the first time in, I guess, forever to pay their schools. So, I didn't see any disagreements on Twitter or anything like that about the schools getting paid and the difference. But I guess the only thing I saw was, oh my gosh, Alabama's getting paid more than Auburn and Tennessee to be in the college football video game. But it's just the way the cookie crumbles nowadays. To be successful, you get rewarded. And staying on the track of the football video game here, just some updates from some aspects of the game. There's no cross-play for Online Dynasty, so Xbox and PlayStation do not be able to play Online Dynasty together. That's been the way it has been in Madden for a while. You had to be on the same system to play Online Dynasty or Franchise if you're on Madden. So it's not anything different there. I just think it's weird that you can play cross-platform on NBA 2K and 2K's video games, but not on EA. It seems like they're missing out because a lot of these people that are going to be coming back to college football to play are going to be split off probably into friend groups. Like, you're going to have one friend that has the Xbox, two friends that have the PlayStation. And if you're an older person and you don't have one of those products, you're going to be kind of deciding what I want to buy here to play this game. I just wish that they would get with the times, EA would, and do cross-platform on Online Dynasty so everybody could have a fun time and not have to go worry about missing some friends and playing with others and all that stuff. No mascot mode, so you want to have mascot mashup like they were on past games. We won't have the Stanford tree catching the ball with his mouth or anything like that. I think one good thing I saw on Twitter was mascot mode's a good thing to play one or two times, but after that, you never really touch the mode again unless you're playing with your friends, which I think is very true. You're not going to catch me playing mascot mode all day long. I'm going to be on Road to Glory and on Online Dynasty. And I think Nathan and Gray were here, they would definitely agree. Mascot mode is going to be the fun thing to play when you're with friends. But outside of that, it's not a necessary thing for year one. But I think in the future iterations of the game, we will be sitting here talking about it's in the game. They're just focusing on other aspects. And I don't blame them. They're putting this game out for the first time in a decade. And they have to prioritize the gameplay, the visual aspects, and everything alongside that. And I think, like I said, as they get more iterations of college football, the video game, there will be added things. They'll probably get the awards, the Blitnikoff, other, I forget the other awards sitting here, but they'll be able to get those awards in the game. They'll hopefully be able to get other things like ESPN banners, stuff like that. So maybe College Game Day. They're just focusing. They just have to start off, I think, small, get the small things right, and then expand going forward. And that's what they're doing. Some other things, game will be played much faster than Madden. I think that's a given with college football. The way it moves is much quicker than the NFL. Helmets may get knocked off. I think that'd be pretty cool. I don't think you're going to get the Jadeveon Clowney running through that guy and popping his helmet off. I don't think that's going to be what happens. It's probably going to be like in a play where the player's helmet just comes off and he has to put it back on and come out of the game. That's probably more of what they're referring to, because as I mentioned on last week's show, depth is going to be a big thing. So I think that ties into that depth thing where you're going to have players have their helmet come off and have to come out of the game for a play. And if you don't have a good backup, you're kind of screwed. So I think that kind of ties into that. There's going to be no BCS option for Dynasty. Once again, I don't really think they're missing out on anything there. I think that might be something they put in the game in future iterations, but me sitting here, I'm not really going to be like, oh man, I missed the BCS option for Dynasty, because I'm going to be wanting to play the college football playoff and see how the selection committee works much more than I would the BCS. That's going to be the fun thing. And if they allow you to expand the playoff, there's no College Game Day, as I mentioned earlier. I think that's the biggest miss that I'm going to go over, is no College Game Day, nothing like that before a game. But as I mentioned, they're focusing on the small things, getting those right. And then as the game gets older and they put more out there, they'll probably add College Game Day in, because I would assume that would be a very difficult thing to do. And getting all the voice recordings and all that would be a huge daunting task. And they had the huge daunting task of re-recording lines from guys like Reese Davis and Kirk Herbstreit and other Jesse Palmer, guys like that. So they had to get those right. And I think like I said, as I'm repeating myself over and over again, but I can't enforce it enough, there's just more iterations come out of the game. Just got to be patient with it. They'll implement more and more things. At least I hope going forward. There'll be custom playbooks. There's always been custom playbooks in Madden to be able to make those. So no surprise there. No ESPN license or scoreboard. I think that's a huge loss. But I think, once again, they're just waiting for other games to come out, and they're probably going to use the money they make off this game to funnel into probably getting the ESPN license to use. There'll be a ticker at the bottom of the screen, though, like there have been in past games, showing probably final scores from around the country and stats and stuff like that. So there will be some aspect of an ESPN type thing where you'll have a ticker on the bottom showing you the scores. They have it on Madden. 5-star players will feel different, completely different than 2-star players. I think that was a big issue with other Madden. There are other college football games in the past, like 14, where I could go recruit a 2- or 3-star quarterback that had 90 speed, and he would feel just as good as the 5-star quarterback I recruited, even though he was a 65 overall and the 5-star recruited was 80 overall. So I think seeing that big difference is going to be important. So people just don't glitch the system and go recruit all these 2- and 3-star players and make them gods. Where you can still do that, it's just going to be a lot more work than it would be trying to get that 5-star player and him immediately having an impact. Whereas more realistic nowadays, where the 5-star player is going to have much more impact than a 3- or 2-star. Now, there'll be occasional outliers of that, but that's the majority of the thing. It'll be way more equipment than Madden. I believe there's going to be some masks have your player put on, stuff like that. So I think all in all those aspects of college football get me excited. Like I mentioned last week, get me excited for the college football video game. It's just, what does the gameplay look like? What is the gameplay like? I need to see the gameplay for me to sit here and say that I'm willing to go buy the game. Because once again, as I mentioned last week with Nathan, I've been screwed multiple times getting all this wonderful news about, we're going to have this in the game. We've been working on this game for so long. And then I get the game and the gameplay is utter trash. It's almost unplayable. So I have to see the gameplay. I have to watch it. I have to hear what other people's reviews of it are, and not the biased ones, of course. I don't want to get the people paid by EA Sports to give it a good review. I want to hear and see the reviews of people that aren't paid. I just want to be able to get the opinions of others and be able to make an opinion on my own. And going forward, I think EA has set up something great. Once again, it's just going to come down to gameplay. And if it's the good as they say it's been, people have been saying it's been, then we're in for a good game. But if it's like Madden or anything close to it, we are not going to have a good time. And it's going to ruin this franchise going forward. And I'm not sure if EA Sports would be able to recover if they managed to ruin college football, considering how bad Madden has been for the past 5 years. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, students of the game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.